Welcome to episode 3 of Walk Me Through the Orchard, where we'll hear Liz Malmgren share a hilarious story of second chances gone completely wrong. I'm Kristen Ridge, creator and host. Last week, we enjoyed a unique story about surprises, divine intervention, and adapting to change with Julian and Val Kendall. If you haven't listened to it yet, it's a remarkable story. Liz Malmgren was born in 1978 and raised in the River Grove area of Provo, just off Grandview Hill, and moved on to Grandview Hill about 20 years ago with her husband and children. Liz is one of the most interesting people I know. She's an artist, a writer, and an expert in graphic and media design. She has many visible talents, but is also someone who thinks deeply and consciously about the world and her relationship to it and others. She has a story that begins in childhood and comes full circle in her adult life when she least expects it. It's a story about first love, unfortunate first impressions, and the reality that if we ever get a second chance to make another impression, sometimes it's just not in the cards. Liz, I'm honestly thrilled that you agreed to share a story for this project. You're a gifted storyteller and have written dozens of personal stories over the years. The story you are sharing today begins when your children were young and it was one of those absolute train wrecks of a day. Is that about right?
Yeah, it was a very, very bad day. but it is one of my favorite stories, so I'm excited to share it. So it had been a week of back and forth with preschool, and I had all these, you know, I had four kids, and one in preschool, one at, well, two at two different elementary schools, and then another one in a different preschool. So basically, I had four kids in four schools. So I was driving everywhere all the time. But this, my youngest one, who was in this earlier preschool, the parking lot of that preschool was just a landmine. It was a disaster of potholes, and just every time I drove through there, the bottom of my car would scrape and all sorts of things. And I had pulled in, it was a Monday morning, and I pulled into this preschool parking lot, and I heard this crunch as I ran over another large piece of plastic that had fallen off the underside of my van. and it had been happening for a while because this parking lot had destroyed the undercarriage of my car.
Oh my gosh.
Fortunately, my van never dropped a piece while I was driving, so I'm not sure what I would have done if it had done that, but it never did. Sometimes I would drag a piece for a little while, but they always fully dropped when the car stopped. I never really knew what to do with them. They had these large pieces of plastic, and I wasn't sure if at some point I would need them again. I don't know. Yeah. So I would toss them into the trunk of my car, and I would always toss them on top of a a big pile of bags that I needed to take to go to DI. So you're probably thinking, why do you have a big pile of bags that need to go to DI in the trunk of your car? And I would have to say it's because I suffer from anxiety. I have a lot of anxiety. And they're weird anxieties. They're just bizarre things that make no sense, which I guess is kind of the point of anxiety. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And one of them is donating things to DI. It stresses me out because I never know if I'm supposed to get out of the car and help them. Or if I get out of the car and help them, I think they're thinking, oh my gosh, just what are you doing? Leave me alone. You don't know what you're doing. You don't even know where to put anything. Why are you helping me? Go back. But then if I stay in the car, I think they're thinking, wow, you're such a lazy brat. Why don't you help and get your stuff? Yeah. Why don't you come get it out of the car? So it's paralyzing to me. And so instead of actually donating things to DI, the trunk of my car just piles up with things that need to be donated to DI. And at this time in my life, also large plastics pieces, like dirty plastic pieces of car that would fall. Yeah. So the trunk of my car was not the best place to be. So when I came to the stop in this parking lot, I hopped out, I picked up that large dirty piece of plastic and just threw it in the back of this growing pile of dirty car parts and DI bags in my trunk. But I thought, you know, who cares? It's fine. This is just my life. By Tuesday, so that was Monday, by Tuesday I could tell that my van was getting worse. I was having a hard time turning, it was slow, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. And the only thing I could think is that one of these loose pieces of plastic was kind of dragging against my tire. Yeah. And it seemed like, because I had a loose piece that was right there by my tire. So I got some duct tape, and I just tried to tape it up.
Yeah.
And of course I took the straightest routes possible so that I wouldn't have to turn. And I wouldn't have to deal with it. I just kind of shoved it in the back of my mind. And every time I stopped, I would just stick my hand underneath and just try to shove it back up. It never really helped, but at least I felt like I was doing something.
Sure.
Wednesday was this crazy day. The schedule was packed. I had one kid that had to go to preschool. I had a lunch date. My daughter had sixth grade graduation. My other son had violin lessons, and my daughter then had a track meet. It was all perfectly orchestrated with no time spare. I had it worked down to like the minute. We go here, we go here, we go here, we go here. but as I dropped the first kiddo off at lunch and went to lunch, I noticed that it was getting harder and harder to steer, even harder than before. But I just kept shoving that bumper back up at each stop and pressed on. As I pulled into the elementary school parking lot to pick up my son that attended and went to the girl's sixth grade graduation, the van jolted, pulling in, and it's just this big, like,
oh my gosh.
And I thought, oh no. As if I thought it was like I'd run over a curb. I thought, this is terrible. And I was worried. The whole graduation, I was just sick. I just didn't know what I was going to do. But I knew that if I could just get my son from preschool, from another school, sorry, his other school up the street, not from preschool. I'd already got the one from preschool. But if I could get him from the school up the street and get home, then I could just use massive amounts of duct tape to hold up the bumper and continue on with my day. So that was my plan. I just got to get home. And I don't live far from the school. I live right close to the school. I can go pick him up, run to the house, duct tape, and just continue on. And I thought, you know, I can do this. It's fine. So I got the girl and the boy, my son who's from preschool, I got him in the car, and we pulled out of the parking lot, and it became very apparent that I was going to be going nowhere, and I needed duct tape, and I needed duct tape now.
A lot of duct tape.
A lot of duct tape, and I needed it now. So I pull over, and at this point, I swore a few times because I have a bit of a potty mouth, so I did say a few choice curse words. I collected myself, and I called a neighbor, and as soon as my neighbor said hello, I just started sobbing. It was just all too much. I just started sobbing and sobbing and sobbing, and she's thinking, oh my gosh, what's happened to you? But eventually I was able to just kind of get a grip, and I just said, I need duct tape. And she started laughing because she thought someone had died. But I convinced her that really I just needed a lot of duct tape. And she didn't have any, but being an amazing neighbor she was, she called all of her other neighbors, found some duct tape, and delivered it to my car.
There's the phone tree or something.
For duct tape. So, in nice pants and heels and pearls, because it was sixth grade graduation and I had dressed up, I crawled underneath my van and I started slapping pieces of duct tape up everywhere I could get them to stick. Literally anywhere they would stick. Anything that was hanging, some things that were just there, everything got taped up. I think it would be reasonable to say that I used half a roll of duct tape on the underside of my van that day.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot. I emerged covered in dirt, sweat, and grime, but feeling confident that I would be able to resume my day. Unfortunately, as soon as I pulled out again, I could tell that I had fixed nothing. I said a few more choice words, and I pulled over on the other side of the road. I was really frustrated, and I was really confused. And I got out of the car. I'd already covered everything in duct tape, but what more could I possibly do? And I was now running out of time. So as I was contemplating my next move, this smart-mouthed elementary school kid walks by and says, "Hey, nice flat tire." And I just started swearing up a storm. Because apparently my slowly disintegrating car had made me blind to something as simple and obvious as a flat tire.
Goodness.
And it was completely and utterly unusable. It was flat as flat could be. I couldn't hold it. I couldn't hold my composure any longer. I lost it.
Yeah.
I began making frantic, hysterical, tear-filled phone calls. I had a friend pick up my kid from school. I asked my mom to pick the kid up from preschool. The little man who was in the car with me, my little son who was in the car with me, he just told me he had to pee.
Oh.
And I was like, this is not a good time to pee. So I said to him, I said, well, why don't your sister drive you run you across the street to go to the bathroom at the school? And he said, no, I only pee at home.
Uh-oh.
So that wasn't great. He had to wait. Finally, I sent the girl home with a different friend and called my mom again. She agreed to print the girl's race forms out and forge my signature for her track meet. And
nice.
My little son again informs me that he would rather pee in the van than hold it and wait at home. And he did. He peed in his...
In the car.
In the car.
In the car seat.
In the car seat. And the whole van reeked of urine.
Oh.
And it was just like the cherry on top of the cake.
Oh, my goodness.
So the van reeks of urine. I called and I canceled violin. I was pretty wound up and definitely surprised to hear someone behind come up behind me and say, "Ma'am, do you need help changing that tire?" I started swearing again because I just was out of it. And I said, "Yes, I've had a very bad day. Swear, 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 swear." He was slightly taken aback by what I assume is the profanity that I was using. And he says, "Do you have a spare?" And I said, "Oh, I do. I have a spare. I think so." I said, "Let's go look in the trunk." And not really thinking about it, I opened the trunk. And that's right, I opened this trunk full of DI bags and dirty car parts, and my van smells like urine. And I scratched the back of my neck, and we both kind of stared at the large pile of crap in the back of my car. And I thought, yeah, this is definitely worse than donating things to DI. This is worse. I probably just should have pushed through that anxiety. So then it hit me, and I said, "Wait a minute. I don't need you. I have roadside assistance. But thank you. You're super nice. I appreciate it." And I was right, and I called roadside assistance, and he started to walk away. And as he starts to walk away, he stops, and he turns, and he says, "You know, you look really familiar. Did we go to the same high school?" And I look at him and I think, wow, he does look familiar. Like, really familiar. But then, because the day I thought couldn't possibly get any worse, it came to me and I knew exactly who he was. And it was not good. I said, "Oh my gosh, you're Barry." And I have changed his name. That's not his real name. Okay. But he'll know who he is if he ever hears this.
Okay. Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. And I said, "Yeah, we did go to the same high school, but I'm pretty sure you remember me from elementary school." And when I told him my maiden name, he began to slowly back away and said, "No. Yep, I better go." And I said, "Yeah, I get that." It was not good. So the first time I met Barry, I was in sixth grade, and I fell in love with him immediately. I really, really loved him, and I used to write him love notes all the time. But because I didn't want him to know it was me, because I have anxiety, I would sign other girls' names. But I always wanted to make sure he saw me put them in his desk, because then maybe he'd secretly figure out it was really me. Like, none of it makes any sense. Sixth grade brain, I don't know.
It made sense to you then.
It made sense to me at the time. But I was 12, and I was in love, and yeah, it was a process. So even though I followed him around at recess and always sat by him at assemblies, it was obvious that he did not love me back. In fact, looking back, it was highly probable he thought I was creepy. However, I got invited to a sleepover at a friend's house who just happened to live up the street from him, and I knew it was time to pull out the big guns. So I talked my friends into grabbing the large Costco-sized box of toilet paper they had in their garage. And we unrolled all of it, every square of it, and we wrote "I love Barry" onto every square. And then we rolled it back up. I mean, it took us hours. It was a project.
Yeah.
We just sat and talked and wrote and sat and talked and wrote.
There are a lot of rolls in a Costco.
A lot of rolls.
Yeah.
And then we used all of those rolls to toilet paper his house. And it was a disaster. I mean, his house was just, we really did a good job.
How long did that take?
Oh, all night. I mean, it took us all day to write it. And then it took us probably an hour that night to toilet paper his house.
Yeah.
Monday at school, he learned that it had been my idea to toilet paper his house because of my so-called friends tattled on me. But even after he realized how much I loved him, with this toilet paper, like, how could you not see the amount of affection I had?
Exactly.
He still didn't love me back.
Oh my gosh.
So in seventh grade, my friend and I were walking home from junior high, and I noticed Barry was walking behind us. I still had a crush on him. I couldn't get over it. It occurred to me that maybe the only reason he hadn't sent me a note confessing his sweet, secret, undying love for me was because he didn't know where I lived. I mean, right? How could he send me a letter if he doesn't know where I live?
Could be it.
So I decided I was going to show him where I lived. The only problem was that I lived on a cul-de-sac, and he wasn't going to follow me down a cul-de-sac. But, as luck would have it, my house backed up to the road that we were walking on. So, in order for him to see where I lived, all I needed to do was climb over the back fence. And then he would see,
genius.
This is the house that I live in, and then he could bring me my love notes. So, my friend and I decide that we're going to climb over the back fence. She hoists me over the top of the back fence, and as I jumped down over the other side, my knee came scraping down the other side of the fence, giving me the world's longest, thickest splinter. And it was bloody, and it was gross. And my friend spent at least an hour picking wood out of my knee with tweezers. I still have a scar from it. But I never got a love note. Still, never got a love note.
It never happened.
But I'm proud to say that was the last of my obsessive, stalkerish behavior, and it was time to let him go. I honestly don't remember ever seeing him again until that day in front of elementary school when I had a flat tire. And there he was, and I was wearing pearls and heels, covered in sweat, dirt, grime, and tears. The trunk of my van was full of garbage, and my children smelled like urine. Not to mention I'd been cursing like a drunken sailor. And as Barry slowly backed away from me, I thought, that's right. One little love note and you could have had all this.
Oh.
So that is my story of one of the worst days of my life.
I honestly love it. This story makes me think of so many things. And one of the things I'm wondering is, you know, you mentioned you had anxiety, but you also had this really developed sense of confidence as a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that in, you know, your choice to express your love to Barry and this confidence you had.
It's a weird mix of confidence and not confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I had a lot of really big ideas as a kid. And, yeah. And I never really wanted to follow through with them because I was a little nervous to do so. But my friends always encouraged me to do it. I had these friends that thought my ideas were amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think I got most of my confidence from the encouragement of these other people around me, that when I said, hey, this is what we should do, and then I'd say, maybe we shouldn't, they'd say, oh, no.
We should do this.
We gotta do this. Okay. And so there was a lot of that going on, and I mean, I think I have several friends who would tell you that I'm the reason that they were grounded from recess for however many weeks in a row because I had some big grand scheme, and I usually never got in trouble. It was usually all the people around me that got in trouble, but I was this quiet, sort of
unsuspecting
little kid who sat in the corner, and nobody thought that I could have possibly come up with these evil plans. But they were usually mine. It's just that I got the confidence from other people. Okay. Or I talked them into doing it for me.
Yeah, I think moral support can go a long way. So that's super interesting.
Awesome. Now my friends are a little more intelligent, and they usually say, no, that's not a good idea.
Oh my goodness. So is your car still full of DI items? Let's talk about that.
It's not. I actually keep my trunk very clean now. I'm a little paranoid about getting a flat tire now and having to dig out my spare tire. But I do have a room in my house that collects DI.
Oh, okay. I have a closet. But
I have a room where the whole corner is dedicated to the DI bags. And as soon as my husband kind of says, all right, this pile is getting too big, then he'll go with me. Moral support. We'll go together to DI. And I still always am like, do I get out? Do I stay in? Do I get out? Okay. I don't know. I usually get out and just stand there awkwardly like, here's my bags.
I agree. I think it's awkward for everyone. We're not exactly sure who's supposed to do what. But, well, let's see. One other question. How long did it take that vehicle to completely die? Or do you happen to have that vehicle with duct tape still?
That vehicle died. We changed the tire. I think we had it another 3 years after that. But we ran that vehicle into the ground. I do remember at one point taking it to the mechanic for its regular checkup, and the mechanic coming to my husband and saying, do you realize that the whole undercarriage of your car is covered in duct tape for no reason?
Was that when your husband first found out?
Yeah. He's like, huh. That's I didn't know that. That's weird. They said it's okay. We took it all off.
So did you ever admit to this?
I did. Okay. I admitted to what had happened. But yeah, they were some very confused mechanics. But yeah, that car, we ended up trading it in and getting a different car about 3 years later.
I am surprised it lasted that long.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this hilarious story. I love everything about it, and I'm just so glad that you would be willing to share it with us. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That's it for this episode of Walk Me Through the Orchard. Next week, we will hear some tender anecdotes about compassion by Carol Laux, who has lived on Grandview Hill since the fall of 1980. If listening to these stories has made you think of your own memories, please contact me at 801-687-1044 to share your story with Grandview Hill.